-3 is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older.
-3 with Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello and welcome to Draft Week, sports fans. We interrupt your regular programming for a special edition of the Old Manning Cast, a deep dive that we have been plotting for a year now. In draft week, I knew this is something we had to do, and I started to reach out to alleged experts about doing it, and they said, I had no idea that that thing had happened, so let's tell you what that thing is. It is the greatest draft for one team in the history of people. Before you jump on your old pal Dave Dameshek here, I want you to know something. This was Kevin Hench's idea. It's his brainchild. Kevin Hench, how are you? Are you ready to jump in to the 1974 NFL draft performed by the Pittsburgh Steelers? Like I say, I'm happy to debate just about anything, and we can debate what the second greatest draft in pro football history is, but there is no question about number one. You ready to roll here, fella?
I've been ready for a year. I've been talking about the 50th anniversary of the greatest draft, not just in football, but in sports history. And by the way, God willing, we'll be watching professional sports as a species for 1,000 years. There'll never be another draft like the 1974 Pittsburgh Steelers draft. It is, prepare to have your minds expanded with knowledge and blown with the scope of this draft that changed football history, as you and I well know. And there's so many components to it. So I am more than ready to rock and roll. People are talking about the draft this week. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, JJ McCarthy. We're talking about the draft of all time. Nothing's close. And by the way, every team preparing for this year's draft, this week's draft, is hoping for a top 10 QB, a starter, finding a nickelback in the sixth round. Nobody's getting 5 Hall of Famers in this draft. Okay. That happened one time, and we're about to tell you all about it.
And I promise you, Dave the Steelers fan will not lean any more than necessary into celebrating black and gold specifically, although that's what we're here to do today. I will also tick off for you, with Hench's help, the other candidates for the best drafts in pro football history. We probably won't dip into NBA and Major League Baseball and the puck today. But this all begins, the greatest dynasty in football in the 20th century is in the 70s. The Steelers, of course, everyone knows, tick off 4 Lombardi trophies in the span of 6 years. But the story begins in the prior decade, in the 60s. And really, before we get into all of those specifics, a reminder that the draft mattered more up until 1993. We talk about the inflection points on the pro football biography, and they are, of course, the NFL-AFL merger. I'm talking Super Bowl era history, of course. It is the Super Bowl starting things off and bringing the sport to another level. Then the AFL-NFL merger, helped in part by Namath getting over on the Colts in Super Bowl III. Then there is the installation of the Mel Blunt rule. We'll talk about Mel Blunt here in just a second, but Mel Blunt is so dominant physically that the NFL has to give the receivers and their quarterbacks an advantage back, so it's a little more entertaining for the fans watching at home. They install the Mel Blunt rule to free the passing game up. 93 is the start of free agency. And then this millennium, we have a number of rules that chip away at defense's alleged advantages that favor offense, more scoring, and, like I say, allegedly more player safety. That last part is TBD as we go forward here. And so the draft was never more important than it was in the 70s, because who you got on your roster was likely to stay on your roster as long as you wanted them to stay on your roster. The teams that drafted well are the ones that dominated football in the 70s. And we are talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers, but we're also talking about the Dallas Cowboys. And let's start it off here, Hench, with the seminal meeting. Dan Rooney, of course, his father, Art Rooney, is the owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers. In 1960, his son Dan Rooney becomes the head of player personnel. In late 1967, Dan Rooney is looking at the Pittsburgh Courier, the preeminent or one of the preeminent black newspapers in these United States. And as he did every year at the end of college football season, Bill Nunn laid out his HBCU specific All-American players in the Pittsburgh Courier. Dan Rooney looked at that and asked, why do we not know who these players are? He took a meeting with Bill Nunn. He said, why are we not more tied together? You're in Pittsburgh, we're in Pittsburgh. Why aren't we aware of these players? Bill Nunn told him, it's because I don't like the Steelers. I don't like some of your front office people. I don't like your head coach. I don't think they deal well or have much regard for black players. And Dan Rooney, sort of like you see in movies, said, I don't like your mean-spirited words about my team. You're hired, fella. And so began the process of the Steelers sort of jumping the rest of pro football and finding a path to high-end players that very few other teams were even giving a look at.
Bill Nunn, definitely the Branch Rickey of the NFL in a way. You know, it's like, it's not like social justice necessarily so much as like, we're definitely going to win games with these guys, you know, which obviously is what the Rooney family was interested in.
Let me squeeze in a quick break here.
You know, when the conversation turns tampers, I always go with my number one as Caesars. Let's talk about them a little bit, shall we? Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesars Palace. All this can be yours when you bet with Caesars Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns rewards credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using this code. Listen up. Omaha Full, the word Omaha and the word full. And then you place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great. If you keep those winnings, but if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and over only. Offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harrah's, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained,
poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
I'm not suggesting that the Pittsburgh Steelers, with the help of Bill Nunn, were the first pro football team to identify HBCU players as a way to get ahead of the rest of the league. The Kansas City Chiefs, and we can tick through some of the examples here that preceded that, but I think the biggest one is Kansas City. In 1963, like I say, one of the few other teams to draft more than one Hall of Famer in the same draft. They take first overall Buck Buchanan out of Grambling and later get Bobby Bell. So that's 1963. And the Steelers get into the game with Bill Nunn. They hire him. His first year with the Steelers is 1968. The year after that, they bring in the Emperor Chaz Knoll. And so is formed the brain trust of the Steelers in the late 60s. And the first pick they make once fully formed is from North Texas State, not an HBCU, but an awfully small school. Joe Green, AKA Mean Joe Green, the foundation of what would become the Steel Curtain and the great dynasty of the 70s.
And then when's LC Greenwood arrive?
LC Greenwood is a fascinating tale. Terry Hanratty out of Notre Dame goes second, and LC Greenwood also arrives later in that draft. A bit of chicanery from Bill Nunn because he had two jobs at the same time. He's still writing for the Courier, still providing his All-Americans. He leaves off a couple of names annually, it appears. LC Greenwood is nowhere to be found on that list. Why? Because Bill Nunn, in his second job, wanted the Pittsburgh Steelers to draft LC Greenwood. So, accident. He didn't list Greenwood among his HBCU All-Americans. There's Greenwood for the Steelers to take. And now one half of the Steel Curtain, which is, of course, Mean Joe, LC Greenwood, later joined by Dwight White and Fats Holmes. That is the original Steel Curtain.
Even with Mean Joe Green and LC Greenwood and the Steel Curtain forming, in December of 1973, in the playoffs against the Raiders, the Steelers lose 33-14. Listen to these stats. The Raiders rush for 232 yards on 55 carries. That's a lot of possession. So the Steelers, you know, every draft, as we look at this draft that's upon us, right? You watch Mac Jones and Bailey Zappe float balls to the defense and you're like, oh, we need a quarterback. I mean, every team like ends their season. Obviously, Steelers now have Justin Fields because the Bears are like, we need a quarterback and we're going to get one in Caleb Williams. So the Steelers, as good as they were, they won 10 games. They went to the playoffs. They're like, we got to figure out how to stop the run. We can't give up 232 yards rushing. And in that game, number one overall draft pick from a few years earlier, Terry Bradshaw, you're trailing the whole game and you complete seven passes to wide receivers. So he goes 12 for 25, seven completions to wide receivers. And it's like, we need to stop the run and we got to get this country boy some weapons on the outside. So let's get into it.
Okay, let me just say 1970, because to prove the point of is if you don't know it already, Hench, like I say, who you drafted was who on your was going to be on your roster for the next 10 years, unless you regarded them as a bum and then you would cut them. There was not free agency or otherwise to fix your roster up. Two Hall of Famers drafted in 1970, Bradshaw and Mel Blount from Southern. In the third round, 71, you get the aforementioned Mad Dog Dwight White from Texas A&M Commerce, and Fats Holmes in the seventh from Texas Southern. Now you got your Steel Curtain. Jack Ham comes in the second round. In the first round, Frank Lewis from Grambling goes eighth overall. He spent 7 years in Pittsburgh as a starter. Moon Mullins from USC, Mike Wagner from Western Illinois in the 11th round. That's all in 1970. 71, Justin. This is with Bill Nunn, Dan Rooney, and all those guys. 72, Franco Harris in the 13th, goes 13th overall. He's also in the Hall of Fame. Then we get to 74. And interestingly, as I say, the main competition for team of the decade, which then ends up being a competition for team of the century, the Dallas Cowboys in 1974, they go HBCU. First overall, Ed Too Tall Jones is their pick. So it's not merely dipping into the HBCUs. It's identifying the right guys to take because Ed Too Tall Jones is a fine NFL player. He's not a Hall of Famer. Now we can get into it here with the 21st overall pick.
Well, hold on.
Because go ahead.
You mentioned Tennessee State. So Too Tall Jones goes first overall to the Cowboys, who got that pick in a trade with the Oilers for Bubba Smith's brother, Toady Smith, who did not have, he had already been a kind of semi-bust and then kind of continued his bust career, and a receiver like Billy Franks, like a nothing receiver. So they got the number one pick in the draft and the number one pick in the third round, who they take Danny White with, by the way. But
very at
number
nice.
One, they take Too Tall Jones, number one overall from Tennessee State. At number four overall, the Bears take linebacker Wayman Bryant, also from Tennessee State. Two guys from Tennessee State go in the first four picks of the draft. And Wayman Bryant will be the first of 11 linebackers taken before Jack Lambert. Okay. Now
it is amazing. And also to my earlier point about the good teams in that era, drafting well. You mentioned Danny White. Mark Van Egan goes to the Raiders. Nat Moore goes to the Dolphins. It's not a coincidence that these are the teams that are successful in the coming years. Continue now, Hench.
Okay, so a lot of times you'll just have a slew. You know, the Herschel Walker trade will set you up with draft picks. You know, obviously you have to score on them. But when you're looking at five Hall of Famers from one draft, you're like, well, what pick did the Steelers have? Well, 21st overall, you don't immediately go to Hall of Famer. Now, they did take the first wide receiver off the board, not from a small college that Bill Nunn discovered, from USC, Lynn Swann. Let's get Terry Bradshaw a legit weapon. Lynn Swann, Hall of Famer.
But of course, the Emperor Chaz Knoll covets after seeing the highlight reel of one John Stallworth, wants to take John Stallworth and has to be talked down by Bill Nunn and others from taking John Stallworth instead of the SC kid, the superstar Lynn Swann, who everybody wanted, including the team drafting immediately after them, the Dallas Cowboys. Lynn Swann would have worn the star on the side of his hat. Drew Pearson gets there as a free agent the year before. He's a starter. He's starting to show signs of emergence for the Cowboys, but they still feel like they need a receiver to go along with Drew Pearson and Golden Richards. They're ready to take Lynn Swann, but the Steelers get him first, and so begins the legendary draft of the Steelers.
Well, you're so lucky that, unlike Bill Belichick, apparently Chaz Knoll could be talked out of bad ideas, because as we'll learn shortly, Swanee was not going to be available in the fourth round, but another Hall of Fame wide receiver would still be there in the fourth round. So it would have been idiotic to take him at 21 if Stallworth is there. Interestingly right. enough, what number does John Stallworth go? I know we're getting ahead of ourselves. Number 82 overall. In the draft.
And that's significant because John Stallworth, for the kids out there, he wore number 82. So four drafted Steelers draft four Hall of Famers. They add a fifth in free agency in Donnie Schell. There's another Hall of Famer from that 74 draft class. Can you name him, Hench? The only non-Steeler. No.
Randy
One of the rivals, though, Dave Casper, the tight end from Notre Dame.
Well, didn't Randy Gratishar didn't make the Hall of Fame?
You know what? Bradishar, is he now a Hall of Famer? Did he just get in this most recent class? He may have. The Steelers, though, when it's their turn at 46, two picks after Dave Casper is selected, Jack Lambert is sitting there from Kent State. The Steelers, of course, now having drafted Lynn Swann, aren't going to go back-to-back with wide receivers. It's 1974, after all. So instead, they go with a 205, 210-pound wiry guy out of Kent State, Jack Lambert, Jack Splatt, the face, the icon, the sort of personification of the Steel Curtain defense for the next decade, right?
And the stopping the run problem is immediately solved. It's just immediately addressed with this. Jack Lambert defies physics, right? You know, like, you remember this year the Cowboys tried to play a 205-pound linebacker and they just got trampled every game. Like, just couldn't stop the run. It's like Lambert, you know, he was listed 205, 210. By the time I had his football card, I think he was up to 220, but he hit like Urlacher. Like, he hit like he was 250. It was insane. So with the number two pick, 46 overall, 11th linebacker taken, Hall of Famer Jack Lambert addressed.
And a good comp. Boy, that's interesting that you sort of you floated the name Urlacher there, because the aspect of Lambert's game that I think probably young people aren't aware of, because what rises to the top is the face and the missing front teeth and the hits and the finger wagging and the trash talking after a big hit and all of that. But he could run, and that was his primary virtue to the Steelers, because they had just created the cover two defense and they needed a linebacker in the middle who could drop like that. It's interesting, and it's something that I love about certain teams, is that they don't just win, but they win with the same method or the same general philosophical approach through the decades. Obviously the Steelers with the cover two and what Tony Dungy turned it into, and otherwise it's fascinating that sort of is an essential position for the rise of the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 70s. They don't have a third round pick. And that brings us to the fourth round pick from Alabama A&M, 82nd overall, John Stallworth. And Hench, I guess this is a good place to ask a New England Patriots fan the age-old question for Steelers fans: if you could have only one, Lynn Swann or John Stallworth?
That's the crazy thing. You know, we all grew up on NFL films, so I mean, not that Stallworth didn't have crazy highlights in Super Bowls, but you know, we've all seen Swanee's catches in Super Bowl 10, right, against the Cowboys, right, over and over again. But if you look at the body of work, Stallworth has over 200 more catches career than Swann, and you know, he just has more longevity. So, you know, just by the numbers, you would take Stallworth. What's interesting is, so you have this draft at the Americana Hotel in New York on January 29th and January 30th, 1974. The Super Bowl was played on January 13th. Think about that in today's context. Like, hey, Dolphins and Vikings, you've got 2 weeks. And congratulations on your great season. You got 2 weeks to see if Bill Nunn will part with some tape on some guys. So you have this draft in 74, you win the Super Bowl, you dominate the Vikings 16-6, right? They can't move the ball at all. Lambert is a dominant rookie, all pro, you know, consensus. Everyone knows he's the guy. The following year, Swann wins Super Bowl MVP. You're 2 for 2. You've won two Super Bowls. You're definitely 2 for 2 on your first two draft picks in this draft. Don't have a pick in the third round. Okay. The Stallworth story is amazing. I love that you brought up LC Greenwood and Bill Nunn hiding him, because what Nunn does with Stallworth is everyone sees Stallworth run on a wet track, because, you know, again, he wasn't a secret like LC Greenwood at Arkansas Pine Bluff. People knew about John Stallworth, but he turned in a bad time, right? And nothing freaks scouts out like a bad time. Bill Nunn stuck around and waited till the next day till he ran on a dry track and went, oh, that's how fast that guy is when he's not running in the mud. So this is probably why Bill Nunn told Chaz Knoll, keep your powder dry at number 21 overall. I was with all those guys who saw Stallworth sloshing around on the wet track. He's going to be there. So at number 82, they get number 82, John Stallworth, and people were pissed that Bill Nunn wouldn't share his game film on John Stallworth. It's like, yeah, the Steelers did this smart thing. They hired me. It's a great lesson, by the way. Hey, you want favorable coverage from your local newspaper? Just put that guy on the scouting team.
I mean, how many, you remember Elvis Dumervil and the fax machine and the specifics around that, notwithstanding? I mean, this is within, you know, the last century that this happened. And it sounds like a tale from the Dark Ages about hiding stuff so other people don't find out about you. This is a prominent sport happening in 1974. And this sort of jazz is going on is fascinating stuff. The draft now exponentially more attention paid to it in preview and while it's going on and in retrospect. But like I say, the significance of the actual draft and who you got in the 70s was way more important than it is now because of free agency and the ability to cut bait and all the rest of it. That stuff just didn't exist. So who you got was who you got. And so for John Stallworth to fall there, and it is funny too, it's not an exact science in 2024, but probably a little closer to being so 50 years later than where it was. But I mean, how remarkable is it that one of the great coaches of all time and one of the great personnel guys too in Chaz Knoll is sitting there and thinking like, we got to get John Stallworth in the first round, like a fantasy football owner who you're sitting next to. Like, I really like that guy. Like, okay, you can like him all you want. He's going to be there in three rounds, man. Like, I mean, what a colossal mistake that would have been in hindsight, obviously, for Chuck Knoll to have taken John Stallworth and passed on Lynn Swann. But that's just not a mistake. I don't think any GM is like, we should draft this guy here, and then is proven wrong because the guy is still on the board three rounds later in the 21st century. That just can never happen, right?
No, I mean, nobody would take Cole Strange in the first round. That would never happen nowadays with modern Touché. Technology. So just so the kids understand, getting Lynn Swann and John Stallworth in the same draft would be like getting Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson in the same draft. Like, you just got two Hall of Fame wide receivers. And by the way, and I know it was kind of wild because there was labor strife going on and a strike. Training camp was very weird that subsequent spring after the draft. Like, the veterans were like, it was just a weird time. It wasn't a conventional training camp, but imagine if you go, you know, again, Frank Lewis, nice player. Ron Shanklin
is also Ron a long time starter for them.
You know,
right?
And then Barty Smith, like if you're Bradshaw and suddenly like you're at training camp and you're like, hey, who are these guys? Oh, that's Lynn Swann and John Stallworth. Those are your new receivers. Like, you got to be, oh my God, I'm not going to be a bust. I'm going to win titles. And Stallworth, before we get to our fifth round pick, if Lynn Swann and, you know, Lambert and Swann sort of have the definitive video from the 74 and 75 titles, Stallworth definitely punctuates the dynasty with the touchdown catch against the Rams, you know, the adjustment, the crazy Bradshaw throw, underrated throw, I think, in his.
Well, I mean, it's funny. I agree with you that he certainly could have been the Super Bowl 14 MVP, but it sort of obscures his great performance in Super Bowl 13, which is why. And by the way, that game to me is sort of where and why I see this as a two team conversation, the Steelers and the Cowboys rising up together almost side by side in that decade. It all kind of peaks in Super Bowl 13 when you have more Hall of Famers on the field and on the sidelines in the executive office and otherwise than in any game ever played in the history of people. And you mentioned Bradshaw, and of course I mentioned the Mel Blount rule, and it all peaks that in the back half of the 70s, as that rivalry presses on, sort of like the Celtics and Lakers would the following decade in the NBA, the Steelers don't really add significant players. The most significant guy added in the second half of the 70s is Tony Dorsett out of Pittsburgh, ironically, to the Cowboys. The Steelers, though, gain a player in a way in 78 because of the Mel Blount rule, which reveals Terry Bradshaw, oh, can actually be a virtue to us. He's not just a passenger to turn around and hand it off and try and stroke a pass or three over the course of 60 minutes. He can actually be the driver of this offense. And again, the Steelers jumped the league by taking advantage of the rule that was supposed to push them back down to the pack, which is remarkable stuff. And of course, that season ends with them playing the aforementioned Dallas Cowboys in the Super Bowl, Swan and Stallworth, Stallworth and Swan, we can have that debate. I think kids might look up the numbers of either or both guys and say, I'm underwhelmed by both. But you do have to recognize the difference in the rules. They were two of, at worst, the five best receivers in pro football in the 70s. Their numbers may not tell that tale, but look at their peer group, Drew Pearson, Harold Jackson, and a very short list of other guys that would even be contenders for that title. Now, with all that said, we get to the fifth round, Hinch.
Now, how old was Ray Mansfield in 1974?
Not sure.
Because I think he was a Pro Bowl center. So he must have been moving to that point where they're like, it's not crazy for us to take a center out of Wisconsin in the fifth round, even though we have a very good starting center. And Iron Mike Webster wouldn't start for a couple years, right? You talk about the two legs of the dynasty, 74, right. 75, 78, 79. Iron Mike Webster is there in the fifth round out of Wisconsin, and he's 4 for 4, the fourth Hall of Famer to go in this draft. And Iron Mike Webster on the short list of greatest center of all time, right? I mean, he's sure. Jim Otto for the old timers, Dwight Stevenson for the mid old timers. Who else would be on that list?
Well, I mean, I'll steer you back to the Steelers specifically. You talk about a lineage. You go Mansfield, who was a high end performer for stretches of his career. Then Mike Webster, Dermani Dawson, and Marquise Pouncey. You talk about one position, one specific Ooh. Position, and the string of guys through it. It really compares with your Boston left Red field. Sox left fielders left kind field. Of That's pretty kind good. Of level kind of guys. But yes, I mean, Mike Webster proves to be the anchor of the offensive line. Now there are those, and I've talked to the late Gil Brandt, who was doing a lot of the drafting, and he will tell you, and it's ugly, he once put his hands on my shoulders and he said, I talked to Mike Webster and he told me we wouldn't have won those Super Bowls against your guys if it weren't for a little bit of help that we were getting. My pushback on that is all the pro football teams were doing what the Steelers offensive line was doing. I hate to include that little bit of ugliness in our genuflection to the past here, but of course,
he was known as Iron Mike Webster because he was taking iron supplements, right? I mean, he wasn't taking anything.
They were nice.
It's the greatest draft in history.
We don't need to dip into all that crap.
They were not
all they were doing was keeping up with the Joneses. Who else was doing it? All the rest of the pro football teams. That's who was doing
okay.
it.
Okay.
And now a quick break.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day. But sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
So you'd think you got a Hall of Famer in the first round. You got a Hall of Famer in the second round. You got a Hall of Famer in the fourth round at Alabama A&M. You got a Hall of Famer in the fifth round out of Wisconsin. Enough with the greed, Steelers. But Bill Nunn is not done. Bill Nunn, he knew Stallworth would be available at number 82. And he had a little secret. There's going to be a Hall of Fame safety out of South Carolina State that's not going to get drafted at all. Nobody knows about this guy. We don't have to spend a seventh rounder on this guy. We can just invite Donnie Schell to camp and then wait for him to be enshrined in Canton with the four other guys. And the crazy thing, you mentioned Mike Wagner. Mike Wagner's a Pro Bowler. Glenn Edwards is a Pro Bowler. You've got two Pro Bowl safeties. You know what we should get is a third. Let's get another Pro Bowl.
Well, and Donnie Shell is an afterthought for long stretches in the 70s and really breaks out as a team leader on the field and beyond in the 80s. John Stallworth sticks around, and those, you know, people remember in Pittsburgh the 80s as a major drop off for obvious reasons. But boy, if Terry Bradshaw doesn't get hurt in 83, the cupboard ain't bare. But once you lose the QB, things go down from there. But yes, Donnie Shell emerges in the back half of his career as one of the best at the position, which, to your point, when they're winning those Super Bowls, especially the first couple of ones, he's barely a factor at all because of Edwards and Mike Wagner in front of him.
I mean, it's so wild. I mean, it's a great lesson too, about merit and getting the best players. You know, obviously we all understand that now, but I think about Nunn and his relationship with the Steelers and going like, there's an opportunity here at these colleges. And remember when Scotty Bowman just was like, these Scandinavians and Russians, they're pretty, like, the consensus was you have to be a North American snot knocker in the NHL playoffs. And it's like, yeah, what if those other guys never touch the puck? Does it matter? Like, and so then he just got these crazy puck movers. Everybody could move the puck. We're going to skate circles around you with the Scandinavians and the Russians. And then that changed hockey. Now, obviously we're all used to it. And of course, after Bill Nunn's work was done, everyone was like, we will find them, that this will not keep happening.
Right. But well, it's a great point you make, because like I talk about those inflection points when things change and when certain teams get the jump on the rest of the league. And a lot of them have to do with figuring out a pipeline of personnel. And you say, you know, Jackie Robinson has a different gravity to it, but you know, that's 1946, 30 years after Jackie Robinson is when this draft, or roughly is when this is happening. This is in our lifetime that the Steelers sort of get a jump on the rest of the league. It isn't to say that they're the first team to dip into the HPCU. Well, it's just that they do a deep dive on it. And a year later in the draft, it's interesting to note that some other teams are finally starting to catch on to this. Two Jackson State guys, Walter Payton and Robert Brazil, get drafted by that. But by that point, it's a little bit too late. The Steelers have already gotten ahead of you and embraced those players. So yeah, it's a fascinating point by you. And you know what more, I remember a little because it was more recent, but you know, the NHL getting the Russian pipeline going, and you know, Major League Baseball with the Latin pipeline going. These are major events. It's fascinating that the Pittsburgh Steelers did it, much like the Red Wings did with Russian players in the 90s, that the Steelers kind of figured that out in the early stages, or the late 60s, early 70s. Now, so I mentioned the Cowboys, and let me get to them. So 1964, if you were going to hold up any draft as the second best that we've ever seen in pro football, it would be that 64 draft. This is prior to Gale Brandt, but Tex Schramm and Coach Tom Landry draft Mel Renfro in the second round, Bullet Bob Hayes in the seventh, and Roger Staubach. And this is a savvy, unorthodox play, because he's at Navy as Staubach. He's the Heisman winner, but he has to go off for service. So they're really playing the long game here. Gil Brandt, also an innovator in a number of ways. I once asked Gil Brandt, boy, where, you know, who came up with the idea of, because the Dallas Cowboys, I think, were the first team to have a former college basketball player playing tight end in the NFL. And I said, boy, a fascinating trend that really has stood the test of time. Where did that start? He said, where do you think it started? It started with me. I'm the one who brought him in. And he can tick off the two or three guys he brought in for that. And so they are not exactly the same as the Steelers, but they are trying to take some unorthodox bets that other pro football teams aren't. So I say 1964, shout out to that one. And then I would float, not because I'm talking to a Patriots fan, Hench, but 1995, I know most people would say, well, of course, any draft that included Tom Brady in his underpants has to stand as the Patriots' best ever. I say no. I say it's Ty Law, Curtis Martin, and Ted Johnson in 95. So two Hall of Famers and a high-end performer and tentpole pieces for what would become your dynasty.
That's pretty great, obviously. And as people get ready for their team to gack it this week in the draft, again, two Hall of Famers not going to happen for your team this week. It's incredible to have Ty Law and Curtis Martin in the same draft, but five. I mean, it's never going to happen. Two might happen. Three is a long shot. Five is a never, which is why I'm confident that this special episode will stand the test of time. You know, we'll know by week 8 next year, right? We can just go, not a Hall of Famer, not a Hall of Famer, not a Hall of Famer, and nothing will come remotely close to this black and gold draft, the 50th anniversary of the 1974 draft.
And just to pay it off, because I promised it at the top, these are the other ones, and my counting may be inexact here, but as far as I can tell, the other teams that have drafted as many as two Hall of Famers in the same draft since 1960, the Packers did it, I think, in 58, 56,
in
somewhere
58,
way back.
The Packers take Jim Taylor, Ray Nitschke, and Jerry Kramer. Okay. That's pretty solid.
Buccaneers in the same draft get Sapp and Derek Brooks. The Bills in 85 get Bruce Smith and Andre Reed. The Bears in 83. This is a great draft. This might be your third best draft behind that Cowboys draft I mentioned. Bears in 83 get two Hall of Famers, Richard Dent late and Jimbo Covert out of Pitt early. Dave Duerson and Willie Gault as well. The Raiders in 68 get Snake Stabler and Art Shell. The Ravens in 96 famously... They're still the Browns, everybody, but they get Ray Lewis and Jonathan Ogden in the first round, both of them. Then they win the Super Bowl. Poor Browns fans. Speaking of the Browns, 57, they get Jim Brown and some guy I've never heard of. The Lions in 51 did it. They got a couple. There's 58. I got it with Taylor, Nitschke, and Kramer. And I mentioned 63, Buck Buchanan and Bobby Bell, but I don't think any of them compares or comes in anywhere close to the 1974 draft by the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Emperor Chaz Knoll, Dan Rooney, Art Rooney Jr., Dick Haley, and of course, Bill Nunn, who passed away a few years ago and is now not only in the Hall of Fame, but now there is the Bill Nunn Award that is given out annually. Hench, do you want to wrap it up there or do you want to play a little bit of
trivia?
Well,
I think you're definitely forgetting about the 2022 draft where the Patriots got in the same draft Cole Strange.
Right.
Tyquan Thornton.
Oh.
Marcus Jones. Jack Jones. It's worse from there.
Well, I was going to do a different list and see how much we could go back and forth, Mr. Lister style, on who those Hall of Famers were in Super Bowl 13 and see who runs out first.
Well, there's one of them drops a touchdown pass, right?
That's correct. Very nice. Jackie Smith gets us off and rolling. Ready? Jackie Smith, Lynn Swann.
Mel Renfro.
Nope, you already got buzzed. Mel Renfro's not on the field in 19 in Super
Bowl. He's retired?
Yeah, he's gone.
All
gone
pro in 75. Cliff Harris.
Cliff Harris, very nice. Okay, I should take away all the Cowboys from you and really leave you jammed up. Roger Staubach.
Well, you're going to leave me Franco Harris?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
I mean, the Steelers I should be able to handle, right?
Yeah. All right, you do the Cowboys.
Randy White.
Terry Bradshaw.
Rayfield Wright.
Tony Dorsett.
Oh, look who jumped in on the Cowboys side. All right. I think we just covered all the Cowboys. Might be forgetting one. Non-play. I mean, Tom Landry is in, Gil Brandt is in, and Tex Schramm is in. On the Steelers side, I'm gonna buzz through them. Swan, Stallworth, Franco, Webster, Bradshaw, Lambert, Ham, Shell, Blunt. If I missed any, shame the devil. And of course, the Emperor Chaz Knoll, Bill Nunn, Dan Rooney, Art Rooney, all in the Hall of Fame. If I missed any, like I say, shame on me. Thanks to you for sticking with us through this special edition of the Old Manning Cast. I hope it turned out the way you wanted, Hench. I know I'm a Steelers guy, but you're the one who's championed this for a long time now.
Such an indelible part of NFL history. You know, given how crazy everyone is about the NFL draft, you know, this week is just this huge event. And I just feel like it's the 50th anniversary of the greatest version of this huge event that we're obsessed with. And people don't know about it. They don't know all those guys went in the same draft. We've done a public service.
Like I say, I talked to a couple of people about this and they said, what? That I didn't know that even happened. And these are people who focus on the draft for their life's work. So it's so I'm glad we did that. Great thanks to Jim Wexel for his great book On the Clock about the Steelers draft history. Invaluable stuff there. And thanks to you again for listening. We'll be back with a regular podcast for you later in the week. In the meantime, enjoy the draft. And thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.